Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
CHGO White Sox post-game show, coming to you live from Studio B of our CHGO offices here in the West Loop of Chicago. It's the full CHGO White Sox crew with you. I'm Sean Anderson. Alongside me, our CHGO White Sox beat writer, Vinny Duber. You can follow him at Vinny Duber. Tom Petty from Tampa?
Gainesville, Florida.
Gainesville.
See, okay. I did do it on purpose. Yeah. Nice catch, Sean.
You can follow Vinny at Vinny Duber, and you could read his work at allchgo.com. His latest piece is about Mike Clevenger and Tommy Pham, who we'll talk about a little bit later on today. You can check that out at allchgo.com. The man in the middle is Herb Lawrence.
Hello.
You can follow him at Ecknerwall23. He's our CHGO White Sox community leader. You can follow me at Sean_W_Anderson. You can follow the show at CHGO_White Sox. We're being produced today by Sarah.
Hello.
Hello. And you can hit that thumbs up button. You could become a new diehard over at allchgo.com, just like our friends Mario, Reed, Michael, and Jim did today. Go become a diehard today, and you can get the White Sox weekly newsletter that Vinny posts each and every Monday. We are coming to you live after a White Sox loss to the Tampa Bay Rays. The first one to the Rays this year.
Yeah.
So, hey, something new. Sox lose 8-2. Fun game.
Not really.
I mean, okay.
Yeah, the White Sox could have done better. They not only was the Clevenger performance bad, and we'll get to that, the whole team, like, errors aplenty, not timely hitting. They had chances to score runs and open up this game and actually tie the game when it was 4-2 with two runners on, and they had something going there. And White Sox, three pop-ups in a row, and the Rays get out of that inning. So it was a bad game all around for the White Sox, except for Tan Banks. I don't think he gave up any runs.
We've been talking all year about how, you know, signs of progress need to be made and how they addressed the defense in the offseason. And here's a night in which it kind of fails them again. You know, maybe not as big as it has been in some moments where it actually, you know, led to the game-winning runs and stuff like that. But, I mean, you've got pitchers making mistakes. You know, I thought the Mike Clevenger throw to second base in which Nicky Lopez gets charged with an error for dropping it, I thought that was a weird, you know, decision for him to go to second the way the runner was going there. We saw Brian Ramos make a low throw to Nicky Lopez. We saw Tim Hill throw a ball down the right field line and, you know, set up some runs. So it was an ugly day defensively. These are the type of nights that you thought at least maybe wouldn't end in a win, but we're going to go away with everything that Chris Getz did during the offseason, everything that Pedro Grifol preached during the spring. They haven't gone away quite enough, even though they're probably a much better defensive team than they were last year. Those mistakes keep popping up.
And I know it felt like it was impossible to get Harold Ramirez out today, 4-for-4, but he had a double that easily could have been an out at second base. Robbie Grossman had a ball that just kind of rolled to him and it went under his glove, and Harold Ramirez kept running and slid into second base because Robbie Grossman just couldn't simply pick up a ball in right field. So, I mean, you talk about the mistakes. I mean, it's as simplistic as picking up a ball. It's as simplistic as, I think there was one pitch from Clevenger that hits Corey Lee's glove and gets away and allows a runner to advance to second base.
And a team like the Rays, they're going to play fast, right? They're going to do the things that Pedro Grifol wants to see from this team. They're going to take advantage of those mistakes. I mean, there's never a question that they're going to move up a base when something like that happens, like you just described. There's never a question that they're going to take the extra base. There's never a question that they're going to pull off a double steal of second and third at one point during the game. You know, the White Sox want to be like that. They got to do stuff like that.
I know the White Sox have been the team that has been pulling in all these cash considerations. Maybe it's time to go to Tampa. They're a very, you know, frugal group. Maybe you propose a trade. Pedro Grifol gets to manage the fast Rays, and the White Sox get Kevin Cash. And they could send cash to Tampa for cash.
Cash for cash.
Cash for cash. I mean,
think,
it sounds like a
so
good
Kevin
idea.
Cash played. Do you think he ever got traded for cash?
I'll look it up. Yes or no?
No.
No? You don't think Kevin Cash was worth enough
it was a backup catcher.
To get traded?
So, no, I don't think he was. Mm.
Traded to the Rays for Chad Gaudin. Gaudin?
Okay. Godin.
Godin.
Godin. Okay, yep. All right, there you go. No, minor league deals. I think he was only traded once. Yeah. Mm. No.
It'd be too perfect.
Yeah, no. Acquired for Angel Sanchez, but no cash. Oh. So, no cash for cash. Darn. But we can still make it happen. Hey, Pedro Grifol can manage the fast Rays. Kevin Cash can come and reunite with Charlie Montoya. It sounds great to me.
No.
Okay.
Right. I mean, great for the White Sox, but no. The Tampa Bay Rays, like, we're good. Right. Thanks, though.
Let's get into the game today. Sox lose 8-2. Why don't we start with the good stuff first? Because in the top of the third, Tommy Pham, who you wrote about at allchgo.com, Vinny, hit a two-run homer. Very nice homer going opposite field off Tyler Alexander. Doesn't that make you feel good?
I mean, this guy's playing well. I mean, I know we made sort of a questionable comment about what Bob Nightingale wrote over the weekend, saying he's already one of the leading candidates to be the White Sox All-Star. I don't know if I'd go quite that far, but he's playing very well. This was his 10th game for them. He's had a nice 10 games. And for a team that, for the vast majority of this season to this point, could not score any runs, basically on a nightly basis, to have a guy who's producing pretty much game in and game out is quite noticeable and certainly a pleasure for the White Sox lineup, I'm sure.
Yeah, and the games before this one started, they were averaging almost 5 runs a game when Tommy Pham started playing for the White Sox. So, yeah, he's doing well. And that pitch wasn't just a, you know, run-of-the-mill pitch. It was an 0-2 fastball in the outside corner. And Tommy Pham, with the power and the skill to hit that ball over the fence, it would have been a home run in every ballpark, I think, except for, I think, Baltimore. But it was a great at bat by him, and he's doing well for himself. And I know people are saying, which prospect will he be traded for? That is the only thing. That is the only thing that Tommy Pham provides for the White Sox. This good season that leads to a prospect that might hit later on. Now, the other guy that pitched today is in the same boat, but he failed miserably in Mike Clevenger.
I know you want to talk about him, but I'm going to do every single thing that I can to delay the inevitable.
I know.
So I get it. You want to talk about Mike Clevenger. I want to talk about Tommy Pham.
I understand. I'm just saying those two people on the team have the same job. One succeeded, the other one failed.
Today. You missed out on starter Chris Flexen, as Bob Nightingale referred to him, now warming up in the bullpen in the eighth inning.
No one's coming for Chris Flexen.
No. Pham's definitely interesting. It's good to see him with a 102-mile-per-hour homer off the bat. His second barrel this year. The one thing that I'm just following with Pham is how much can his average exit velocity stay closer to that 90 mile-per-hour exit velocity rather than the 88 he's currently at, just because we've seen with players that are 36 and older, that is a very sharp decline. Once it falls off, there's no real getting it back. Pham, through age 35, has been impressively in the top 10 percentile of average exit velocity. So I think that was like the one silver lining of signing a 36-year-old was, okay, maybe he can give you a little bit of something, and the Mets saw a little bit of something last year in the first half with Tommy Pham. I think this is a great sign to see, you know, 102-mile-per-hour home run and just see that exit velocity still stay up there. His max exit velocity is usually around like 111, and this homer is like 102. So he's still not getting that like next level pop. So I guess that's like one thing to watch out for, but it does seem like, again, Tommy Pham, unlike the guy that you want to talk about, there is no getting ready because he's always stayed ready, right? John Schifrin calls out with the home run. You know where to find Tommy Pham in the weight room.
Yeah.
Right. So it's a great presence, and I wish there was more Tommy Phams on this team than Paul DeJong or Martin Maldonado's or Chris Flexen. And it's been great to see that specific veteran leadership kind of come into this organization and thrive immediately. So shout out to Tommy Pham. He's the only, the lone bright spot of the Sox today. Brian Ramos got
in this
hit.
Game. Yeah, I mean, some of the relievers were okay.
Vaughn hit the ball hard.
I was going to say, Andrew Vaughn, the stats might not prove it out, but every single hit or every single ball that he hit was over 95 miles per hour and to varying degrees of success. But I, as a process over results guy, he's crushing the ball right now. So eventually those will drop in and he'll have a better average than he is right now.
So Bob Nightingale referred to Tommy Pham as the leading all-star for the Chicago White Sox. Would we disagree with that? Does the homer for Tommy Pham put him above it? Or
no.
Which White Sox do you have above Tommy Pham in the all-star ballot?
I mean, certainly Garrett Crochet. I think he's been the one that stands out the most. But I mean, Tommy Pham has been good. He's had a nice 10 games. Guys, it's been 10 games. It's been a week and a half.
I agree.
Let's not go ahead and move mountains just yet. A week and a half.
If you're talking about the full season, Gavin Sheets.
True.
He's having a really solid season, not just for a White Sox. He's hitting the ball hard. He's got a decent average. I don't know where you'd put him, either right or first base or DH, but all those places would be probably filled with players that are more deserving than Gavin Sheets, but they have to send one.
I got one that you guys didn't mention. Sheets isn't a bad name. Crochet isn't a bad name either. But surprisingly, Corey Lee's been pretty decent. Can Corey Lee be the White Sox all-star representation in 2024?
The backup catcher?
No. Well, I mean, is he the backup catcher at this point? He's just kind of a catcher.
That's the problem. Like, he doesn't play enough, I don't think, for anybody to see, oh, okay, that's the White Sox representative. He plays, you know, maybe if it's three games, he's playing one of those.
36 most played appearances for a catcher this year. That's 0.2 F4. I mean, come on. He went from five hits to basically 0.5 war. I mean, that's something to write home about.
And he's still technically a rookie, too.
Yes, he is. All right, we'll take a break, and then we'll talk about the big story of today, the headline, Mike Clevenger. Want to let you know, though, about our friends over at Salerno's and Prize Pick. Herb, we're going to be enjoying some lovely Salerno's tomorrow, aren't we? We're going to have the Blackhawks doing the lottery show tomorrow. We got Sox postgame. We got Cubs postgame, and that's why we're going to go over to Salerno's Pizza, Salerno's on tap.
It's going to be a full house.
Yeah. Call 312-666-3444 to get half off. I think I added one more five there.
Throw in as many numbers as you want.
312-666-3444. There you go for our friends over at Salerno's Pizza.
All right, Salerno's Pizza. Let's see. Stop by Solero's on Tap, located at 1201 West Grand. Thank you, Sean, for vamping, too. No Avenue at Chicago's West Town, and enjoy a tavern-style pizza and ice-cold beers, like this one I have right in front of me. Whether you are headed to the game or want to watch it live on our big-screen TVs or watching from home, we've got you covered. Go to salernospizza.com or call 312-666-3444. Mention CHGO and get half off of your pizza. Half off of your pizza, guys. Come on now. Go there right now. Head to salernospizza.com or call 312-666-3444 for more information. Mention CHGO and get half off of your pizza.
All you people are going to be jealous tomorrow when we're on postgame eating Salerno's, so take advantage of the
deal. But they don't have to be jealous.
No, I'm right, so take advantage of the deal.
They could be inspired.
They can be inspired. Yes. Thank you, Vinny. You should also be inspired to check out our friends over at Prize Picks, the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America. They are the easiest and most exciting way to play DFS. It's just you against the number. Instead of battling thousands of other players, including pros and sharks, you pick more than or less than on 2 to 6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll in. With baseball season officially underway, there's no way better way to cash in on the action than Prize Picks. Add your favorite players from the diamond to your Prize Picks lineup all season long, like whatever a Johnny DeLuca is, or maybe a Tommy Pham. There you go. Whether it's strikeouts, RBIs, or first inning runs, take your pick of more than or less than and add them to your Prize Picks lineup today. I just missed on my entry that I gave out in pregame. Mike Clevenger went under, or I guess less than, four strikeouts today, so that was an easy cash. I don't think he had a single one.
He did not.
There we go. And then Mitch Keller, of all people, throws his first or second complete game shutout in his career and gets five strikeouts. Missed by a half. I mean, that's brutal. And that's the fun of playing Prize Picks. You can get your entry submitted in less than 60 seconds. So go check out the fun and test your knowledge with our friends over at Prize Picks at prizepicks.com/CHGO and use code CHGO for a first deposit match up to $100. That's prizepicks.com/CHGO and use code CHGO. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. All right, Herb, you've been champing at the bit here to talk about Mike Clevenger. Two innings pitched, six hits allowed. Four walks, three earned runs, and no strikeouts for Mike Clevenger. What was your big takeaway from Clev?
Wild. Like, didn't have the control or command of any of his pitches, and, like, gave up four walks in the start today. Very erratic. Like, walked a Rosarena in the first inning and then promptly picked him off. Good. Awesome. Top notch. And then the second inning, I was walking away, and then I saw the play where he gets a bunt hit right to him. I don't know if the catcher's telling them 2-2-2-2-2, but in that case, I'm taking the out that they're giving me, which would have been throwing to first and getting the out there. He throws the second. It looked like a good throw. Nicky Lopez drops the ball. He's charged with the error eventually, and then those runs come in. I thought it was foolhardy for the White Sox to bring this guy up when he had two starts down there in Charlotte, and he only went seven innings, gave up 10 hits, and wasn't showing you, like, okay, I'm doing the things I need to do in the major leagues down here in AAA, so let me come up to the AAA or come up to the major league level and do the same things in major leagues. No, like, as I said in the pregame, I said that at most you're probably going to get five innings out of him, and so it's going to be a bullpen game. You got two plus out of him. Just horrendous as a starter right there. Gave up three earned runs. I didn't strike out anybody, so that was a big-time L. And for Mike Clevenger to be worth being on this roster, for the White Sox to have him as one of the 26, he needs to pitch like he pitched last year, at minimum. That's the bottom line. 3.77 ERA, 9-9 record. That type of performance is what Mike Clevenger has to bring to you. Today was a total failure.
Yeah, I mean, listen, when you're giving up six hits and walking four guys, you're obviously not going to be efficient. And boy, he wasn't efficient. I mean, he was, over 25 or just around about 25 pitches in the first inning. Mm-hmm. He was near 50 after two innings. And I mean, they had to send him back out there, obviously. It was only the third inning, but yeah, it was not good. It was not what I don't know if I would say it's not what I expected, but it surely wasn't what the White Sox expected. Oh. I think that they, as we talked about in the pregame show, part of the reason that he's here is because he's somewhat dependable, right? He's had a lengthy major league career. He's had success. And while it hasn't always been top of the line success, you saw what they got from him over the course of a season last year. And you just read off the numbers. It was reliability. He was their best starting pitcher last year. And he didn't have the sort of peaks and valleys that some of the other guys had. He was maybe a little just more consistent, even if he wasn't spectacular. Tonight was a big time valley, and listen, it's the first start. He's going to be here at least two or three more months. He could very well turn this into that consistency that they would expect from him. But in the first go, if they were thinking about reliability, I think I even used the term maybe they could take a breath tonight after using the bullpen so much in recent days. Nope. He was not efficient. He was throwing way too many pitches. He was very wild. We didn't even mention, you know, the wild pitch that he had in that first inning as well. You say great job picking off a Rosarena, but you walked him in the first place, and that's obviously not going to help you further down the line, not just in that one moment. So a very poor performance from him, one of the worst performances we've seen probably from a White Sox starting pitcher this season, which is saying something because they obviously are off to the start that they're off to. But he's going to obviously continue to get chances. They need to look a lot better than they did tonight.
Yeah, and Kevin M. saying, could it have been that he wasn't ready to start the year at the major league level? He had two warm-up starts in AAA, like you mentioned it, and you know Ryan mentioning that he's shaking off the rust.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Well, but also, I mean, like, it's been a month. I mean, you're a professional baseball player. I'm sorry, you're 32. You've been a major leaguer for seven seasons. You should know how it should feel to get to up to, you know, normal efficiency, normal, you know, starting prowess. Michael Lorenzen's doing fine for the Rangers. He started four games. He's got an ERA under four. I mean, Tommy Pham stayed ready. I wasn't a fan of the Clevenger signing. I don't know the person, obviously, but it just seems from Cleveland, San Diego, a little bit from what we know from last year in Chicago, it doesn't seem like this guy is a true team guy. I think that part of his success last year was motivated by having his name dragged through the mud or whatever you want to call it. I think this is a guy that, you know, cashed out. He got his money. I mean, he got his money this year. He got his player option. He was able to opt out, and he made up that money. I don't have high hopes for Clevinger. If he is able to go out and give them a sub-4 ERA like he did last year, maybe he'll be able to be traded at the deadline because he doesn't have the buyout that was looming last year. Like, there are ways, absolutely, that he can, you know, return a prospect for them, but I'm still with Sam. Like, what's the point of bringing back Clevinger? There's little upside, and at this point, I'd rather see what Jonathan Cannon can do. I'd rather see what Nick Nastrini can do. If you're really this desperate for innings, you have Brad Keller. You have Chris Flexen, who apparently is now getting pushed out of the rotation, warming up in the eighth inning. You have the ability to go out and get really anybody else. Like, I didn't think that there was a need to go out and sign Clevinger. And, you know, this start just kind of proved that I don't think he has that type of edge that they were looking for in spring training where, you know, this guy has something to prove. I don't like the way that you came out today.
It's one game. Obviously, that's really the only, you know, thing that I would say to keep in mind. But I think the thing that stands out, and we brought this up obviously when the signing occurred, but you mentioned kind of the alternatives that they could have gone to for eight innings or even for a sign and flip type acquisition, right? I think maybe the idea is that, hey, this guy has a name, he has a reputation, he's had success. If he can go out and duplicate what he did last year, and it's only going to cost us $3 million, let's turn that into a prospect kind of thing. But that $3 million stands out to me, not because that is a gargantuan salary in Major League Baseball, but because what the White Sox had spent the entire offseason doing, which was seemingly making very cost-conscious moves, right? I mean, you can look around at the position players that they added, all on very low salaries. You can look around at you know, the pitchers outside of Eric Fetty that they added, all on very low salaries. Why is $3 million for Mike Clevinger the bargain that a $500,000 for somebody who is just kind of, for lack of a better term, on the scrap heap, why isn't that bargain more appealing? Again, I can see the reasoning that they think, oh, this guy for $3 million, for what he can do, for what he could turn into, that might be the bargain there. But when you're signing your starting shortstop and your starting catcher for well under that mark, it would seem that they had cost very much in mind, and then they go and allocate $3 million for a guy who, you know, obviously does this tonight. It's just one game, but we'll see how it goes.
And I think, like, it wasn't just his walking people. He was walking the bottom of the order, the Caballeros of the world, the Rorikvecs, which these people turned into the people who were driving in and scoring all the runs. But, like, go and attack them. Like, if they get hits off you, God bless. People are like, hey, man, we understand that. You're just, you know, coming back. But some of that is he doesn't have command and control of his pitches. Some of that is, like, I don't want to get hit hard type of stuff. Like, if that is mostly of the part where you're just trying to avoid contact, I don't like that. Attack the hitters. Attack these Tampa Bay Rays and see if they can do it. See if Rorvec is a real person. The DeLuca single where he scored two runs, it's a softly hit opposite field single. You don't give too much of a beef on Clevinger there. But some of those balls that were actually hit were hit really hard. And I think Mike Clevinger needs to go back in the lab and wonder how he can get to five innings. That is a minimum that he should be doing each game. And that is the bottom of the bottom. As a veteran who's 32 years old, should be available 4 or 5 innings each time he goes out, even if he gives up a couple runs, 4 or 5, because your value is that you could eat up innings. And then if you can't do that anymore, you're not pitching well right now, so you have zero value for the White Sox. And as somebody said in the chat, I think it was Fred, no team signed him in the offseason. You're not going to get a prospect back that is worth anything, if anything, for Mike Clevinger. Even if he pitches the way he pitched last year, I think you're going to get some throwaway pick coming back for you.
If anything, I mean, again, it depends on his health, too. He wasn't healthy at the trade deadline last year, and I think the most concerning thing is the miles per hour on his pitches. I know that Patrick Nolan threw out that he wasn't too worried about the velocity, but and especially in the third inning and second inning, I mean, you have 24 pitches, 22 pitches, and then 8 pitches. You know, maybe it's just him getting tired from throwing 20 pitches in the first and second, but his max velocity on his fastball was 96.5, which isn't bad, but the average is 93.5, which is basically a tick down, a mile and a half down from last year. His slider was at 79.4 last year, average miles per hour. It was at 78.4 today, so basically down a full tick there too. And his cutter at 82.6 miles per hour. Last year it was around 85. He doesn't have that same... Right, and that's and that cutter is more of a slider.
Yeah.
Right, like because that plays more at 85, and then the slider is more of a sweeper.
Yeah.
But he doesn't have a true out pitch. He had one whiff on 21 swings today. A 5% whiff rate last year was 23.2. I mean, it's just a complete crater off of where he was. And you can ask, like, maybe he'll be able to get back to where he was. Maybe he'll be able to get back to a 5-pitch mix that's more average. But you look at today from my guy TJ Stats, his fastball and slider were at 103 stuff plus and then 102 stuff plus, so 3% and 2% better than major league average, but the other three pitches were below major league average. So if he doesn't have mid to above average major league offerings, he's going to get smacked around, especially if he's not attacking the zone and he's trying to nibble on the outside. He's going to walk guys. And then, you know, he'll hang a slider to Randy Arozarena and he'll hit a double down the line. Like, I don't love what we saw from Clevinger. I don't have anything but a choice to give him all the rope in the world because he's a White Sox pitcher. He's going to make another start for this team. So we'll see what the outing is like next time. But it's all about hopefully his physicality, I think, for me, being back to where it was last year. If he can feel physically where he was and throwing and averaging 95 with his fastball, maybe his stuff will look a lot better. But right now, this guy isn't going
to
cut it.
I was wondering what the rush was to bring him up, though. Like, he obviously wasn't ready, and I'm sure Pedro was going to say something to that effect in the postgame. Like, why bring him up? Like, there wasn't a necessary need for a starting pitcher for the White Sox, as we talked about. Flexen's available. You even had Schuster, who relieved Clevinger today, available. You have other players that could give you innings, especially what you got today from Mike Clevinger. So that was a dumb move by whoever brought him up, Chris Getz, whoever, et cetera.
Guy's on a major league contract. I think that's something to remember. I mean, he's on a major league contract, and I'm not sure that if he gets the green light from a health standpoint that you can say, nah, you got to stay down here. Now, player agrees to that, and then obviously, yeah, you keep going until you need to go. But I would just, you know, loft out there the idea that this is a guy they signed to a major league contract. If the trainer report from the last outing was he's good, he's physically able to throw 90 pitches, what are you going to tell Mike Clevinger that says we need you to stay down in AAA?
Then there's no excuses for his performance today then.
Yeah, sure. I mean, right. And I think too, like, we saw with the Tommy Pham contract by April 25th or whatever, he had the option to kind of push the White Sox.
Well, that was a minor league deal though.
Okay, so like right, the Clevinger thing, it wasn't reported that he had that type of ability, but like, do you think that could have been worked in? Like, Clevinger makes his two minor league starts and he's like, well, hey, guys, I did my work, I'm ready to go, and he's kind of pushing that on the Sox? Or
I mean, I just think I think it probably goes both ways, but I mean, when you sign a guy to a major league contract and he's healthy enough to go play at the major league level, I'm not quite sure on the specific rules. But I mean, this is a guy who's pitched in the major leagues for a long time. He's a veteran player. He didn't sign a flyer minor league deal saying, oh, I hope I can work my way back up to the major leagues. They signed him to a major league contract, and I'm not sure that you're able to necessarily keep him down there without his agreement, especially if everything else is clears the way. I'm not saying that's what happened, but I'm just saying that would make a lot of sense, that you can't just keep somebody down there forever without doing something to that major league contract.
And he did have a spring training last year, and in his first start against against Houston in 2023, came out averaging 94.7 on his fastball. That seemingly dipped from the beginning of the year all the way until he got hurt. May 17th, 2023, he was down to 93.1, and then he sat out. And
XRT.
93.1 XRT. Thank you, Lynn Bramer. And then came back on June, in June 2nd, and was back up to 95. So I don't know if this is just you know, shaking off the rust, or if this is maybe just a 33-year-old getting older. I don't know. Hopefully, it's just him shaking off the rust.
It could also just be a bad game. Plenty of other veteran pitchers on this team and on many other teams have had bad games already this year.
That's true. All right, let's take a break, and we'll let you know about our friends over at Liney, and we'll let you know about our friends over at Prize Picks. No. Vinny, why don't you do the Liney's read, and then I'll tell people about CD1. How about
that? The weather is so nice, you guys, and when the weather is so nice, you got to get yourselves all the summer shandy you can get your hands on. Go down to the Jewel. They got towers of it over there. The folks at Liney & Kugel, they have innovated a wonderful, tasty beverage over here. They've taken beer, taken lemonade, smashed them together in some sort of high-tech machinery and turn them into probably the most delicious beverage you can get your hands on this time of year. If you want to go out to the lake for a nice picnic, if you want to go down to the rate for a nice tailgate, what are you going to bring along with you? You're going to bring along a whole crate of summer shandy. If you're like, man, I've had like 15 summer shandies today, I need to get some variety in my life, you're also in luck. There's Berry Vice. There's the great Lakeside Cherry. There's the great Sunset Wheat. And, of course, there's Honey Vice, which is made by real Wisconsin bees. They put on little lab coats and little goggles, and they stir the beer up there in Wisconsin. But, you know, everything you can go with Liney & Kugel's, you can't go wrong. Flavor life's simple moments with Liney & Kugel's, the official craft beer of the Chicago White Sox. Go to liney.com/CHGO. to find delivery options near you. That's LEINIE.com/CHGO. Or pick up Liney & Kugel's pretty much anywhere they sell beer. Liney & Kugel's, flavor the moment. Celebrate responsibly. The Jacob Liney & Kugel Brewing Company, Chippewa Falls.
Yes. Thank you, Vinny. And we also want to let you know about our friends over at CD1 Price Cleaners. They save their customers over 30% on their dry cleaning bill just by switching over to CD1 Price Cleaners. It's in the name. They charge one low price for any garment, even those pesky Rays City Connect sports jerseys. They'll wash them for the same one low price guarantee.
Can they wash the look off of them?
Do you not like them? I guess we'll get to that.
We'll be talking about that soon. That's a tease.
Other cleaners charge a different price for each garment type. Plus, they have upcharges, and you may pay a different price each time you visit at CD1 Price Cleaners. It's in the name. They charge just one low, the same one low price each and every time, and they offer a quick turnaround, either the same or next day. They'll have your order ready for pickup. Other cleaners take 2 to 4 days to have your clean garments ready, and they'll text you once your order is ready for pickup. And they offer wide variety of services like dry cleaning. They'll wash and fold your laundry. They'll wash and launder those blankets and comforters. They'll tailor and alter your clothing, and they'll wash any area rugs or leather that you might be busting out, maybe putting away for the winter. You probably don't need leather for the upcoming summer.
Well, if you have a leather vest, perhaps.
Maybe if you have
leather shorts.
They'll still wash it. Leather shorts.
Yeah, leather shorts.
A leather swimsuit.
Oh, Sarah's got it.
That doesn't work.
Can cows swim?
Swim? I don't know about swim.
Have you ever seen a cow swim?
No, that's what I'm at.
We don't know.
Can't. But
I mean,
like,
you went to Kansas. I would imagine that place is lousy with swimming cows.
I didn't see one, no.
Wow.
Maybe they swam when I left.
Could be.
Cows have powerful muscular legs that help them move on land. The same legs can be used for paddling in the water, allowing them to swim, albeit not as elegantly as some other animals. So they can swim. All right. Visit CHG. Well, what?
I was saying, the more you know.
The more you know. Visit chgo.cdone.com. The link is in the description. Again, that's chgo.cdone. And once you're there, you can pick up from an in-store coupon or online pickup and delivery coupon options. Go check out our friends at chgo.cdone.com. Thank you, CD1 Price Cleaners. Okay, so we're going to talk about the City Connect uniforms, where the White Sox rank between the 24 unveiled City Connect uniforms. We'll also give our top five, and I'll probably throw out my least favorites too, just because I think that's fun.
Sure. I've got my whole list over here.
Me too.
Okay. I have my whole list as well. Why don't we start first and most importantly with the White Sox? Where do the White Sox rank out of those 24 teams?
I mean, for me personally, I have them kind of toward the top. I have them at 8. And okay. Is that where you got them to do, Herb?
Yeah.
Yes. Here's the thing. I wouldn't say that I like them. I wouldn't say that they're very okay. Good. Not the team, the uniforms, right? I wouldn't say that
really
I like...
Very Chris Getz of you. I don't like our team.
I don't like their uniforms. There you go. There's the quote for the headline. But here's my problem with almost all of... with most of the City Connect uniforms, they are themed to the team. And I thought the idea was to theme them to the city. And so, like, the idea that the White Sox uniforms are, like, representing the South Side, but there's just the White Sox font, you know what I mean? Yeah. And, like, the White Sox colors.
Yeah.
Like, that's just taking the existing logo and moving it around a bit. I think they did a good job of that. They're unique. The black pants are, you know, kind of interesting. But, yeah, I'll also say this for all the City Connect uniforms. Like, they didn't make them for me.
Yeah.
Like, they're not, there's no one over at Nike being like, ooh, we really got to please that guy who likes the look of 70s and 80s uniforms and wants very specific city references in all of the uniforms. Like, I get that they're like for a different crowd, and that's fine. So, but yeah, that would be my White Sox City Connect review.
I have them at 8 like you. And like you, Vinny, they already use black in their uniforms for all of them, and especially their alternates. I would have liked to go with the Chicago flag. You have that light blue, you have the red, you have the white there. That would have been a nice homage to Chicago. Not even the Cubs use it. They use their disgusting, terrible uniforms that they wear. It's all blue. It's just disgusting. And Wrigleyville is not even a city. It's not even a neighborhood. It's Lakeview. Just have that across your chest, Lakeview. But, yeah, I would say that the White Sox are one of the best just because, you know, really can't go wrong with how they're structure is with the pinstripes and the black and the little white specks inside, but it could be better.
And of course, as we know from when they revealed them, my number one complaint with the White Sox City Connect uniforms, South Side is two words.
It is, but I like the actual font. I think the font of...
It's the White Sox font.
It looks cool. Yeah. I like it. I don't know. I disagree with you about the Chicago flag, because I mean, even the Cubs like helmet sort of goes into the Chicago flag. Like, that's too on the nose, right? Like,
it needs to be South Side specific.
Yeah. And I didn't really, it's, what's the stone? Graystone, right? What's the
type of building that we have?
Yeah. The pattern. They tried to, like, I, there was an effort made, and I think especially two out of the black City Connect uniforms, I think it's the best one.
The best of the black City Connect uniforms.
There's so many
of
them. There's so many bad ones.
There's so many of them.
Like, the Tampa one's kind of black. I would say the White Sox one is better than that. That one's just bizarre.
The Reds one's black.
The Reds one is trash. A horrendous nightmare to look at. The Baltimore one is boring.
Yes.
The Mets one, they tried to do the Mets and White Sox, I feel like, similarly. Like, the Mets one's more gray, but they tried to go with, like, a vintage look. I think the White Sox did it better than the Mets.
I literally have the Mets right below the White
Sox.
There
you go. I have them in the other category, in the other side, but I'm not a huge fan of the black City Connect ones, and I feel like the White Sox are the best of that bunch. So I'm happy with it. I don't know if I would keep it like in the White Sox uniform rotation. I think if it's keep the City Connect jersey for 5 more years or go to the Field of Dreams uniform, I would rather see the Field of Dreams uniform in rotation than the City Connect jersey. Because I just like throwback jerseys better. I don't know.
And if any team needs to go back to their past for getting old jerseys and reissuing them now, it's the White Sox with a great history of uniforms and logos.
Where are they missing out, though? I mean, it's the black...
The Reds.
We don't need the Reds.
Pinstripe Reds.
Oh, those are the great. Best
they're,
ones.
They're... Yes. The White Sox.
How about the
black and white?
The baby blues that they just made the hockey jersey out of. Those are great.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Those are great. Cool. Yeah.
Those are cool. But that's like every team in Major League Baseball in the 70s had that.
And they looked great.
The 1917 SOX with the O and the X inside the S. Oh, beautiful.
Yeah, I don't know. All right. Let's go to the top five because I had the Sox at 5. So who'd you have at 5, Herb?
I had the Angels at 5. I love cream colored jerseys are very rare and how good the Angels are spelled and the S kind of goes under and it's supposed to be a surfboard look to it. It's just unique and it speaks to the city of Anaheim. So that's perfect. I have them at 5.
Or Orange County in general.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure that Anaheim has coastline, but yeah.
Anaheim.
Did you have 5?
Number 5, I had the Padres.
Okay.
They have a very unique inspiration. I believe it's a roller coaster at one of their local theme parks,
yeah,
or amusement parks, rather, kind of a staple of the city. But again, one that maybe like the everyday person doesn't know. And that is what I think is cool. You're going to notice with me, if it's very specific city references with no regard for team colors. That's what I like about the City Connect jersey. So I had the Padres there. They've got the it's a very goofy color scheme, but it is directly pulled from something, and I think that they nailed that.
I think since this team had so many color options, and you're right that it goes away from their traditional color options, that's why I like this jersey. I like the Diamondbacks jersey for the Diamondbacks. I'm with you in that, like, cream taupe-ish color.
It's tan. It's like desert tan.
Color is even better. It's a little bit too hokey. It's just serpentines, right?
It's serpientes, which is Spanish for snakes.
All right, well, even better. Hey, there we go. Okay, I don't know how to read. So, like, I would go with for Arizona just because I think it's a nice departure from all of their different colors that they have, whether it be the weird teal or the red or the black or the purple or the just desert. They're a desert team. It makes sense.
Yeah.
I'll go over Arizona even, four.
Number four, I had the Angels basically for the same reasons Herb said.
And just for the reasons you said about the Padres, I have them at four.
Okay. All right. Well, I have the Padres at two. We don't need to talk too much about that, but it's just fun. It's bright. It's colorful. It's got that Baja flair. It's basically what you think of when you think of San Diego. Mm-hmm. So I'll go San Diego at two. For three, I had the Atlanta Braves, just because it's literally their classic throwback jersey from the 70s, and it's beautiful.
And that's what
no notes.
And that's why I don't like it. Oh, okay. Because it's not unique. It's just a throwback jersey in a different where they move things around a little bit.
But like,
they didn't
don't
do anything. Make a new thing. Be creative. Use some of the history and the culture of Atlanta. Let's see it.
Don't overthink it.
I went with number three for the Brewers. Brew City, light blue. It's perfect. I love it. I love their uniform. They didn't wear it when I went there on last Friday or two Fridays ago. It's got this hat when they were playing the Yankees, which I think was probably a Nike screw up. But those are beautiful uniforms. I love those.
Dislike because they're just Brewers themed. They're not Milwaukee themed. They should have gone with Happy Days themed uniforms, obviously.
I agree with you. I think that this is the worst division. I had Pittsburgh at 13, Milwaukee at 14, the Cubs at 16, and then Cincinnati at 23. St. Louis doesn't have one, so I really think that's the worst division.
I don't loathe the Cubs ones. They're just kind of boring.
Yeah.
They should have been red, right? If you're going to do the marquee, which is what that is, right? That's the font that's on the marquee. Make the jersey red.
Okay, I can hear that.
And then maybe make the hat like Wrigley Field green, scoreboard green or something like that, right?
Right. Well, then it might be too Christmassy.
That's fine.
But
who cares?
I'm with Herb. It's, I mean, first off, Wrigley Field isn't even an actual neighborhood.
It's true.
I know that they wanted to honor the 77 neighborhoods. You can actually honor one of them by picking an actual neighborhood. Mm-hmm. But it's just bland. Like, that's the thing is if they picked a different color or maybe even went into like the light blue, I would have been a little bit cooler with it, but I don't go crazy for the Cubs one. But it's not like none of these are like super offensive. Like, I don't love like where I have Tampa, I have them at seven, and I think the top seven are very good, and then everything else is just pretty bad. Like, the team that I have eight is Washington. I like the node to Washington, D.C.
Why aren't they pink?
I like the cherry blossoms. Right, but they just
they're gray.
Bland. I don't know. I don't love that. And also, too, Washington's doing this with Baltimore where they're wearing the City Connect jerseys and having the first game on the 7th where Washington's going to wear the City Connect jerseys and Baltimore's going to wear their City Connect jerseys. The White Sox and Cubs were some of the first teams to have City Connect jerseys. Why weren't we doing this for a crosstown series?
Can you not play black against navy, maybe? Is that a thing?
I mean, I don't understand why they don't do that in baseball all the time because you know which team you're in. It's not like football when you're throwing, I need to throw to that uniform. Like, no, you don't need to, that guy's wearing a gray uniform today, and we're also wearing gray, so I'm confused right now. It doesn't make sense. It's baseball.
Yeah, I'm with you. All right, so five ahead the White Sox, four ahead Arizona, three ahead Atlanta, two ahead San Diego.
I've yet to share my three.
Okay, all right, so I'll recap mine then. Five the White Sox, four Arizona, three Atlanta, two San Diego, get us to two.
So my third one was the Marlins, and I think the Marlins ones are really good. It's inspired by the Cuban population down there and Little Havana, where I believe the ballpark is not very far from there either. So very close. And again, disregard for the color, for the team's color scheme, red jerseys, the hat's blue, I think. Right. And they just pop, they look good. And it's a very local cultural nod, which I love.
I also have them at two. I know you haven't got to your two yet, but I have the Marlins at two for my second favorite.
Okay. And then my number one favorite is the Marlins. I guess we're going to be real fun. I guess that's a real just crowd pleaser right there. Two for Vinny and two for you are Miami and I.
They were three for me.
Oh, three for yes. you. My bad. So you 3-2-1.
Yeah.
Huh?
Oh, you haven't finished this two.
You haven't finished your two?
No, I had yet to give my three. I thought we were going in order here. My bad. I got the Kansas City Royals at number two. Mm. I really, really like those uniforms. The KC with the fountain kind of thing is literally like one of their city symbols. It's on all the manhole covers in town. Like it's one of the symbols of the city. Like you think of us with the star. They slapped it on the jersey. They slapped it on the hat. I understand that they're not crazy, colorful, thrilling things, but they look good. And that KC logo is just awesome. I think they did a tremendous job with that. And then they put the little crown in there too for the Royals. It works very well.
I do not like the Royals one because I hate the Royals.
I like the logo. I just think the uniform is boring.
Yeah.
I like the logo, though.
The blue is just, they could have did more with it. Yeah, I like the Royals and the fountain thing. That's cool.
Cubs-like.
Yeah, but I have number one is the Braves. Just, it's a classic. It's great. I know it's not of the theme, but they're like, we're going to cheat. We're just going to give you a great-ass uniform. Here's our small little A, our blue and white. Enjoy. And everybody's like, yes, we enjoy. Thank you for bringing these back. Not unlike the Denver Broncos, who, like, we're going to go totally different from our traditional uniforms and only give you a little smidgen of our good uniforms.
We're going to make the actual uniforms look like they're made by Walmart. Yeah, I'm with you on Atlanta. I had them three, and then six, I had Seattle. That's another, like, throwback, not really actual one.
Number one would be.
Oh, you weren't here when I read it off to Sean earlier?
Probably was.
I got to be honest. I also forgot.
Oh, you forget. All right. Well, so what suspense?
Drum roll, please.
Now, knowing you and knowing the colors you like, I would say Boston.
Number one. Saying, Vinny going to say Colorado number one because his head has been in the mountains lately.
Number one, Boston Red Sox.
Okay.
It's the iconography and the colors of the Boston Marathon. The Red Sox are directly tied to the Boston Marathon. They play that Patriot Day game every year on the day of the Boston Marathon. They threw out the color scheme from the team. They honored the city and something that is very special to the city, very specific to the city. I think those Boston Red Sox uniforms did a perfect job of telling you what the City Connect jersey should be. Listen, those Seattle Mariners jerseys that you were just talking about, they look very nice.
Yeah.
But they are Seattle Mariners jerseys. They are not Seattle jerseys or Washington State jerseys. They are Mariners jerseys. This is a Boston jersey, and I think that is what they should be going for in all of these. They've tried with some of the other ones. Alejandro brings up the Rockies. I really don't like the way the Rockies ones look. I think the idea of taking from... It should surprise no one that I have thoughts on every 50 state license plate. I think that is the best license plate in America, that Colorado one. But the transfer to the jersey did not end up looking very good. So there have been some tries. The Phillies recently brought out the one where it's supposed to be the Declaration of Independence font. It kind of missed for me as well. So they've tried with some of the other ones. The ones that I like the least are the ones where you can't even tell what they're trying to do. You brought up Baltimore, Cincinnati, which I don't like. These new ones that I think are the worst were the ones that were released today, the Tiger ones. I mean, they just don't look like anything. They look like they look like a create a team in a video game kind of thing. So, again, I think Boston's fantastic. The other ones that I ranked high are fantastic, but most of these, I think, they've kind of missed the point a little bit.
I mean, they literally have multiple things they can pull from in Detroit. Motown.
Yeah.
They got the whole Motor City thing, and they're like, let's go with the same ugly-ass kind of theme that the Pistons did a couple years ago. Ugh, no. And another black jersey, too. Terrible.
Another black and blue jersey. Like, yes. I mean, just, ugh. I'm with you, though, Vin, on Boston. I think, like, if you're saying just truly grading on the rubric, like, did you truly connect with the city, especially when they wear it, being very specific about when they wear it, I'm all for the Boston one. I like that one. The worst one is easily the Dodgers one. I think we need to make fun of that one just for a second. It's literally just, it's a blue jersey that says Los Dodgers.
Well, it's their practice jerseys.
Well, it's literally just their practice.
And like the NBA does that thing every year during Hispanic Heritage Month where they throw that on the jerseys, right? Right. We had the Los Bulls jerseys for a while here in town. The Los Dodgers is just that again. Like do something else. Make it the Mexican flag colors or something, right? I mean, right.
Do anything. Anything besides just this. Apparently they're going to have a second go at
it. Yeah, they've already ditched those first ones, yeah.
Knock on wood, it's better. All right. That was our City Connect stuff. That was fun. I'm glad we did that. All right. We didn't talk about this yet because more details are still unfolding. Let's go back to where it started with Jeff Agrist, who originally reported that the White Sox were not going to be re-upping with NBC Sports Chicago. And that it was likely, and not confirmed, that the White Sox, Blackhawks, and Bulls would be moving to NBC Sports Chicago.
From NBC Sports Chicago to Stadium,
in October of this year when the lease ended up coming up. There's been talks that there might be a six-month extension with NBC Sports Chicago, but basically, the White Sox in 2025 will not be broadcast on NBC Sports Chicago, seemingly very likely at this point. Then Scott Powers of The Athletic came out and said, hold on, hold the phone here. According to internal documents that The Athletic has uncovered, Standard Media is now getting involved with this. Again, none of this has been confirmed. No party has made an official announcement that this is happening. But Scott Powers of The Athletic saying that Standard Media, a Nashville-based group, will likely be broadcasting the White Sox, Bulls, and Blackhawks in 2024. So let's start there. The White Sox leaving NBC Sports Chicago and starting their own network. Is this the right move, especially knowing what we've seen from the Cubs and Marquee and their own TV network?
It might be the only move that was available to them, as we've seen NBC kind of get out of the regional sports network game in other markets. You see them, they had a channel in the Pacific Northwest that showed the Blazers games. Blazers stopped being part of that, and so that channel doesn't exist anymore. They had a station in the Washington, D.C. area that showed a whole mess of teams over there. That all went away, and now there's a new regional sports network in that market as well. It sure seems like NBC maybe just isn't in the business of these regional sports networks anymore. And listen, the landscape of regional sports networks in general is just very much up in the air, as you see particularly with baseball teams who are currently part of Bally Sports, having the rug, in some cases with the Minnesota Twins, yep, the rug pulled out from under them in the middle of the season. And right. This is a seemingly constantly changing landscape at the moment. While NBC Sports coming to an end might not have been the desire of Jerry and the owners of the Blackhawks and the way that those three teams operate, it might just be that NBC is like, we're not doing that anymore, and so they need to move on to Plan B. I think the most interesting thing, regardless of where they end up in terms of which company they end up with or partnered with or anything like that, is they need to get a new television network going in a hurry.
Yes.
The Blackhawks season starts in September. They need to show those games somewhere, and whether it's a short-term extension that leads to the beginning of next baseball season or nothing, and they need to be ready to go by October, that's a lot of work.
Yeah, and it makes sense what you're saying about NBC getting out of the game, because otherwise it wouldn't make sense to Jerry Reinsdorf owning more than half of the stuff that goes on to NBC Sports Chicago there with the Bulls and the White Sox there. And it's like, why would I move from here? And you see the landscape of RSNs and how it's going. Yes, the Cubs, Yankees, Dodgers are going to make a bunch of money because they are who they are. Not necessarily the White Sox. There's not a lot of interest for a lot of White Sox stuff right now. It would be the really wrong time for them to do that. If you had to do this, it would do it at a more advantageous time where the team is really high. So, yeah, Jerry was probably put in a trick bag to move this place from NBC Sports Chicago to his own network where he partners with the Blackhawks.
Yes, and there is a new interesting character that has been named in this whole fiasco. Should we call it a fiasco?
I don't know if it's a fiasco quite yet. How about just a saga?
Saga. Oh, okay. The new character in this saga is Soo Kim. He's the chairman of Bally's, and you might be asking, you know, why is Bally's a casino operator getting involved in this? He is the current owner, or not owner, but operator of Standard General LP. He has been an investor since 1997 under the Standard General name, and he basically targets companies that are struggling and under debt or already in bankruptcy, takes them over, and tries to take their assets and makes profit off of them. And Soo Kim is the owner of Standard Media. So Scott Powers of The Athletic bringing in Standard Media, the media company based out of Nashville that owns four TV stations currently. They and Soo Kim were denied the sale of Tegna. They tried to buy Tegna, a media company that owns 50 plus TV stations. They also own Lockdown Podcast Networks. There was a sale for $8.6 billion that was pushed through the government. I think it was officially reported in like 2021, but then it was denied just earlier this year. And it seems like Standard Media is trying to expand their media operations. So with, and this is just very confusing,
you need the Charlie Day the Charlie Day conspiracy theory board behind
very
you.
Much Pepe Silvia. But Jerry started Silver Chalice Ventures in 2009, and that turned into 120 Sports, which turned into Stadium, which was then bought by Sinclair, which then Jerry bought back from Sinclair, and now Jerry owns all of Stadium and has owned all of Stadium since 2023. So my thought...
And Sinclair, of course, used to own all of the Bally's sports channels,
yes.
Which now are owned by something called Diamond.
Yes.
And I think Bally's or somebody tried to buy them all back or something like that. It's very confusing stuff.
And just for my
Diamond folded.
Right.
Yeah.
My edification, the Bally's casino people are not the same people as the Bally TV people.
Great question, Herb.
I think that's correct. So yeah. the Bally's casino people, Soo Kim, is not involved with the Bally's regional sports network. Yes.
The Bally's casino, which is currently under construction over by the old Tribune building.
Yeah. But you could still go in there, right?
Not that one. There's
the one in the Medina Temple.
That's the temporary Bally's casino, yes. Yes.
But that Bally's has been trying to build in Project 78 and have been trying to get in and build their own basically Vegas-like casino for Chicago and be that first 24-hour casino within the city limits. But basically, this all comes down to what I think is happening. Standard Media and Soo Kim wants to expand their media holdings. And with Jerry Reinsdorf now holding the majority of Stadium, and he's already been a person that has sold off to Sinclair to help share broadcasting responsibilities. We saw him own, as you mentioned, 50% of NBC Sports Chicago. The Blackhawks own 25%, and then Comcast owned the other 25%, seemingly like Comcast pulling out of their 25%, leaving NBC Sports Chicago up to their own. It's all leading to, I think, Soo Kim and Jerry Reinsdorf teaming up and maybe possibly forcing White Sox people or fans to pay to watch the games.
I mean, they currently pay to watch the games.
True. But like,
it was
$9 extra for Marquee when it first came out. And then Bally's people that were paying for the RSN were paying $20 a month.
Sure.
So, I mean, it would be an increase.
I mean, here's the thing that a lot of people don't know. Everybody watching this watches the White Sox games, but whether you're a person who watches every White Sox game or you're someone who only has your cable for the Food Network, you're paying for White Sox games and Bulls games and Hawks games. You're paying, your cable bill is more than it would be without NBC Sports Chicago, right? And you do not have the option to say no. It comes built in. And Marquee, obviously, needed to be the same way, but they were new. Mm-hmm. And so they needed to work out those deals with carriers such as Xfinity and all your cable providers and all that. The next channel that the White Sox are on are going to have to go through that. They're not going to be automatically included like NBC Chicago Sports Chicago has been, because NBC Sports Chicago has been automatically included for the last 20 years, right? They're going to have to go through that Marquee thing that Marquee went through, where they weren't on Xfinity when that channel launched and people could not watch the Cubs if they had Xfinity in the city of Chicago. That we'll see how that ends up going, but that is going to be one of the biggest things that you the fan are going to care about once that goes. I think more behind the scenes stuff is it's just a lot of infrastructure and a lot of stuff that you have to build from the ground up that doesn't exist, which already existed with NBC Sports Chicago. So you would see the preference to stay with the channel that already exists, so you don't have to go through building all that stuff and the costs involved therein.
Well, and that's why I think Kim is so important, or is at least the name that's being brought up, is because if you're willing to give Tegna $8.6 billion, you're likely going to be able to, you know, pay the for the infrastructure of a White Sox network, right? And if you're going to be in partnership with Jerry and Stadium, maybe this allows you to expand your media holdings and expand from what? Paducah, Kentucky, and Rhode Island.
Yeah, and I think also Jerry Reinsdorf is 100% cheering tomorrow for the Blackhawks to win the draft lottery again. Because if what Vinny is saying is true, and it is true, you want some people to be like, I'm not watching Connor Bedard and this number one pick from this year because you guys switched to a new network, and the demand of, hey, I want to watch this stuff, get it on my cable system, is going to be the thing driving them to put it on to your cable system. So no one's, the Bulls are the Bulls. So I don't know if a lot of people are going to be clamoring for Bulls basketball in October, and none are going to be clamoring for White Sox baseball in October, but guarantee if the Blackhawks are not being shown, there'll be a fucking uprising from Blackhawks fans and just casual hockey fans who want to see Connor Bedard every night and whoever they're going to pick with the number one or number two or three pick this year.
And two, Minidar brings up that, you know, Stadium might not have to go through all of those hoops that Marquee does because they weren't brand new, right? Stadium has been around for a very long time.
But they're not a TV network.
They don't have a regional sports network. No, right.
They're a content factor. I mean, they make a ton of content, but you can't turn on the TV and flip to them.
Really?
They're on some things, but they're not like wildly distributed.
Because I know they also simulcast to Marquee as well.
Two other networks. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
it's a mess. It's a lot, like Kevin says.
If NBC Sports Chicago, they just build beautiful stadium, beautiful wild studios. I mean, if they're not going to be using them, Jerry could just say, hey, we'll stay here. Yeah. Let me get your spot here at Orleans or NBC Sports or NBC Tower. Take over those stadiums there.
We'll see. Hit that thumbs up button on your way out. Make sure you're subscribing to the CHGO Sports YouTube channel. It is going to be a big day in Chicago. We got Sox postgame, Cubs postgame tomorrow, and as Herb mentioned, the NHL draft lottery, where you will be able to watch along with our CHGO Blackhawks folks. And last year we did that, you got a number one overall pick in Connor Bedard.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to get the excitement you got from Mario last year because, you know, that's one of one. You might still get some great excitement, though, because there is a player like Celebrini, I think his name is.
The guy who used to play for the Bulls? The White Mamba?
That was quick. That was really quick.
Nocione?
No, he's talking about Brian Scalabrine.
Oh, Scalabrine.
That was quick. Yeah, but Mario will be hyped no matter what if they get that number one pick.
I know that all the Bulls guys will be hyped over a Brian Scalabrine reference on the White Sox show. That's Vinny Duber. You can follow him at Vinny Duber. He's our CHGO White Sox beat writer. The man in the middle is Herb Lawrence. You can follow him at EchnerWall23. He's our CHGO White Sox community leader. And you can follow me at Sean_W_Anderson. Thank you to Sarah for producing the show. Make sure you hit that thumbs up button on your way out. And we appreciate everyone for hanging out and commenting their thoughts on another White Sox loss. We will talk to you tomorrow. Goodbye.
Y'all silly like the mayor.